Hello, world. This is the Know Your Place podcast, and this is episode 77. And it shall be called Coming of Age in the Post 9/11 Afghan War America. Stay tuned. Everyone across the world, listeners of this podcast, it's great to be back with you. I'm Charles Altendorf. I'm your host. I realize it's probably been quite a few weeks, almost more than a month since I recorded last time. And sorry about that. It just happens. I get busy sometimes and it gets hard to get down in the studio and do my thing here in this traditional format that people started listening to me for. So, I really had a tough time deciding how I wanted to embrace this issue. I knew it was a big one that was coming up, and I knew I wanted to share my perspectives on it and that people probably wanted to hear my perspectives on it. But it's really not a simple thing to talk about. It's really hard to summarize all my words on how I feel about it. But I'm going to try and give it a shot here today. Because I really do think it's important now, as tomorrow is, as I'm recording this, is September 10th, and I'll probably get it up tonight. Tomorrow is, of course, the 20th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. And we have just recently supposedly withdrawn. I mean, I guess we have a lot of our forces out now. We don't have an embassy in Afghanistan anymore. So it does feel like, we've hit sort of an end of an era. We're entering some type of new era, and I'll talk about it and get into it a bit. So if I really could have like a real simpleton title for this episode, I'd probably have to steal the song titled Jaded from Aerosmith, which it was a song released in 2006. The irony was going to be even more funny if I thought it had come out. I thought it had come out in 2001, but it actually came out in 2006. I think there was a... I got confused with It's My Life by Bon Jovi, but that actually came out in 2002, so I was just way off with all of it. But yeah, I mean, before I even say anything right now, I'm going to do a terrible debating tactic and poison the well, or a terrible argument tactic and just poison the well by saying, I'm just flat out jaded. I am a jaded individual, and we'll dive into that a bit more. So, for those who don't know, I'm 32 years old, okay? So, when September 11th happened, I was 12 years old. I was in 7th grade in middle school, and, I was living in Raleigh, North Carolina at the time. My family, of course, like I've said numerous times to everyone, is originally from Wisconsin, and now I live in, of course, the middle of Kentucky. But, let me just start there, I guess. That's a good place to start. Just as good a place as any place we're going to start if we're going to talk about this subject. So, I was in 7th grade, and, so my teacher comes in and she says, a plane flew into the World Trade Center. And I kind of vaguely knew what the World Trade Center was. I did have some vague ideas about what New York City was, but I'd never been there. I didn't have a lot of experience with New York City. The irony of this is I actually had been to Tucson, Arizona, Chicago a lot, but Chicago's near Milwaukee, so that's not, I've been a lot of places. I'd even been to Washington, D.C. at that point, but I'd never been to New York City. I'd interacted with maybe a few people who were from New York, but for me, really, I really had, and I think I had seen a few TV shows based in New York City, but really, I didn't have a lot of interaction with New York culture in general prior to this. So you have to understand that for a second, is that, America is such a big country, and I think people have trouble understanding this who are from outside of America. Some do. I think there's people are understanding it a little better in modern times. But America is such a big country, and especially now that we've reached the post Sun Belt era where the Sun Belt's developed, the West Coast has developed a lot, Middle America, of course, has developed a bit. There's so much culture and other things happening that not everybody's eyeballs are always on New York and LA anymore. They still are to some degree. Like, don't get me wrong, I did a study once and like 40% of the news articles that came across my Facebook feed were from DC or New York. But in general, like, unless I go and intentionally look up, I actually do watch a YouTuber that's based out in New York City. So now I know a little bit more about what's happening in New York politics. But a lot of the time, I didn't even know what was going on in New York City, especially at that young of an age. So, when she says a plane's flown into the World Trade Center, at the time, I was just like, kind of like, what are you even talking about? What is the World Trade Center? I think it's a tall building, isn't it? And why would a plane fly into it? And why is this a big deal? What's going on? And then, of course, so she turns it on, and I actually watched the second plane fly into it, and then I watched both of the buildings collapse. I saw all that on television as a 12-year-old. And then we ended up going home for the day. I forget when it was. We cut the day kind of short. I don't remember if we went back right away or not. I think we skipped a couple days and then came back. But in those first early days there, even though, like everybody all over the news, don't get me wrong, there were plenty of people who were like, oh, this is a huge tragedy, right? And, they've attacked America, right? And for those first few weeks, I mean, I just felt a straight up disconnection there. And I know that makes me feel sound kind of terrible. I don't mean it in a bad way at all. I have plenty of friends from New York now, and obviously, I don't want to see them be victims of any type of attack or anything, but it just did not affect my life personally very much what was happening in New York City at the time. And so I was kind of just like, well, am I gonna go play basketball with my friends again or go out to the park or whatever? I mean, like, I was 12 years old. It is kind of interesting though. After I've thought about this a lot. I posted recently that there's another irony to me recording this episode now. I posted recently a thing where one of the local news channels asked what the first news memory you had was. And for me, it actually, and I think this is just because I've watched a lot of shows that have sort of like rehashed the 90s, so I remember more about them probably than I actually did at the time. But still, I have a really good memory, and even did at a young age. You can even see it in my daughter now. She's only 4, and she remembers so many things. You can't sneak anything past her practically. So for me, like my early news story memories are still like things like I told him it was the Nancy Kerrigan Tonya Harding thing with the whack to the knee. And for my wife, it was the Bill Clinton impeachment thing. But for a lot of people our age, and maybe people who were slightly younger than us, they all said this was the first thing they remembered from the news, which that kind of took me aback a bit because, like I said, again, when it happened at the time, when I was that age, I was kind of, I don't want to say like I didn't feel bad, or whatever, but it was not like such a personal effrontery to me. And I think that makes a big deal about my perspective and why I'm so jaded about it now, is because it was just never a personal effrontery to me in that way. Like, the tall building I'd grown up visiting was the Sears Tower. I'm trying to think here. The businesses I frequented, we actually, I don't even know if we didn't bank with a bank based out of New York City when we were in North Carolina. A lot of people don't know this, but Charlotte used to be the second biggest banking hub in America. So like, my parents didn't even bank with money from New York, really. I mean, so I just had like almost no connection to what was happening there. And I'm not trying to downplay what happened at all, but I'm trying to really paint this picture of like I had no idea how this was affecting people, or, it just did not feel like such an attack on me as it did to other people, and I don't really know what to do about that. That's just how I feel still, even after this has all gone down. So anyway, and I'll have to admit, I don't really have a good memory of exactly what the debate was around the Patriot Act when it passed, but obviously I'm very staunchly against a lot of the wording in the Patriot Act, and it was passed very quickly. Very few people opposed it. I think Ron Paul did in the House, and of course, legendarily, the Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold was the only vote in the Senate against. Which a lot of the people in the hindsight have been like, well, I just didn't have time to read it. It was rushed before us and this and that. And, I really wish people, that's the situation that's really terrible in our government. And I actually do think it's improving slightly because people have started exposing that a little bit that, like, hey, these are too long. Nobody reads them. You better extend the time, or I'm actually going to vote no. But at the time, I mean, it was just railroaded through. So, for me as a little kid, I just saw this all of a sudden. Because prior to this happening, there was some division in American culture. There was the Rodney King stuff had happened prior, and then I remember a lot of people were still mad about the O.J. Simpson trial, and some people still really believe he was guilty, a lot of people. And so there was some division in American society, but by and large, when I was a little kid, especially when we hit the late 90s, I felt pretty comfortable. Like, that's the thing that shocked me probably so much as a 12-year-old was just it seemed like we flipped the switch overnight and everybody was scared of their shadow. Like, and I mean, legitimately so, I guess, 3,000 people just died from a plane flying to a building, but I mean, it was like overnight, all of a sudden, everybody's just scared of their own shadow and we need all this extra security everywhere and we got to do something about this. What a crazy, this is such a dangerous world. And again, that was just so shocking to me because prior to that, I had felt pretty calm. Like I remember going to the airport to go to Arizona. I thought it was a fun little time. Like it was definitely a weird experience to feel like that switch had just flipped. Especially because it seemed like it was a lot of course, I'm 12 and it felt like a lot of the adults were the ones freaking out, and understandably so to a degree, but also when you're a kid, you kind of expect, and I this is kind of something that makes me mad a little bit older in life still, is that you expect the adults or the people that are older than you or the elders to be the people that are, providing the calm and stability, not the freak out and the terror, the flipping out on everything, and that's just not what happened then, and it's kind of still that way in this country, and that's perhaps the thing that I really makes me the jaded the most about this whole legacy is just people being afraid of their own shadow, being afraid to be American. I personally, I think a more proper response should have been, well, okay. I don't want to get too crazy on my episode, but it is my podcast, they had talked about rebuilding the towers and building them higher. I thought that would have been the more appropriate response than a bunch of people being so afraid of their own shadow that we got, like, people in the street just harassing people because they're supposedly a security threat. People get afraid and they do crazy things when they're afraid. And I think unfortunately, I think the Bush administration in particular profited off that fear to pass some things that would not have been justifiable in other times, and unfortunately set us on a track that hasn't really changed over about 20 years. I don't know what the future holds under this Biden administration. He did pull out, but then the next couple of days later, they did a drone strike and killed innocent people again. So I don't know where we're going from here. It's really hard for me to tell. Anyway, so back to the general timeline of where we're going with this. So after the Patriot Act, my sort of next memory was, I'm a big football fan. I was watching football at the time. Was, they did some real big piano tribute the week after. I don't think they played a New York game the first week after, but the next week after they did, And again, and I think that was, I will say this, that was actually the first time, seeing some of that stuff in pageantry and like, we're with you, New York, and this and that, that I started feeling some emotional connection to what had happened in New York, because prior to that, I felt absolutely, I'll admit it, I felt none. I totally admit it. I felt none. It hadn't affected me in any way in my regular everyday life. But that gave me a little more connection. I said, well, there's people suffering in New York. This is a tragic event. I mean, these people didn't see it coming. It makes sense now to me a little more. So as time went on, of course, I watched a lot of my, well, I don't really know how to phrase this properly for my podcast episode, but I watched a, I watched a lot of people sort of rump. I watched the patriotism in America go up a bit, right? But the problem I always saw with it, and we'll get into it a little further, is people I felt like were putting their patriotism in a lot of misguided ways. And, obviously, first of all, Patriot Act. You make a law that violates half of our constitutional rights, and then you somehow call it the Patriot Act? That doesn't make a lot of sense. But, the biggest one for me was the story of Pat Tillman. And it's just a sad story because Pat, he felt a calling. He wanted to go, and this is where I feel so bad because there's so many people like this. I don't particularly think of myself as a very, I guess I will admit this. I've been told by a lot of other people that I do have some type of above average intelligence, but I don't think of myself as some hardcore genius and everybody else is stupid. I try not to think of it that way. That's not a good way to be. I just think I think I have smarts in other areas that other people don't. But, Pat Tillman. And again, this is probably because I was such a big football fan as a kid. But when I saw him go out there and say, I'm going to sacrifice the rest of my NFL playing career to go fight in the army because this is important to me, to seek out some type of justice for the people of New York. That was very moving. It was incredibly moving. It's so rare, that we see somebody just give up that sort of privilege for that. It harkens back to that CCR song during the Vietnam War, Fortunate Son, right? Where the criticism is, something about his son ain't the one good, he ain't no senator's son, so he's not getting out of the draft. Well, Pat Tillman could have very easily done nothing about what had happened in New York. And instead, and he wasn't even in New York. The guy had grown up in Arizona and played for the Cardinals. Instead, he turned around and said, I'm going to go fight in the war and bring these people justice. Well, I said, okay, wow, that seems super admirable. Well, unfortunately, it turned into a big fiasco because, when he was there, he died of friendly fire in a crazy gunfight where they were fighting insurgents that probably didn't even know Osama bin Laden or, weren't even affiliated with these people. And then he, the military tried to cover it up for several weeks until the truth got out. And I forget how old I was when that happened. I think that happened when I was in high school, but that really put me to the point of where we are now with me saying that I'm just jaded on the whole thing. Because I was like, why was he even over there? It didn't seem to make any damn bit of difference. Pardon my French. I guess I can get away with one or two swears on here. But, it didn't seem to make any difference in the outcome here and bring people to justice. Okay, like, Is it our job to go try and bring these people to justice? Where are we going to find these people? How does sending our whole army over there do it? You know, and that was just that. That was really a tipping point for me. Because I just, you know, I'd seen these people around me. All of a sudden, now we're really mistrusting of everyone. And then when we tried to go invade Iraq, you know, we got in that big diplomatic sort of incident with France. And we decided to, we had this crazy thing where all the government buildings were renaming French fries, freedom fries, because fuck, or because screw France. And I'm like, what? What? Why are we doing this? This is such false patriotism. Right? I mean, again, these are the same people who passed a law called the Patriot Act that basically violates your constitutional rights if they have a way to declare you as an enemy of the state. And, you know, our founding fathers were all enemies of the state. You know, I mean, it's a ridiculous absurdity. So, yeah, that Pat Tillman thing probably sent me over to the edge, being against the wars. And it did a lot before a lot of my peers. Because when I was in high school, several of my peers were saying things like, I'm just not sure you're that patriotic, or it seems like you just don't care about, you know, America or stuff like that. And, you know, I don't know what to say. I love this country. I love living here. I don't see myself moving to any other country, but I did not see the point of our involvement in that situation to the degree we put ourselves in it. And I still don't. So anyway, after that, Pat Tillman dies, and right around the same time, you know, that was when the military sort of found out about my background or whatever, or I don't know what happened. I got in a fist fight in the lunchroom and it's my senior year of high school, and a Marine recruiter walked up to me and really tried to hell hard sell me on joining the Marines. And I was just like, no, I don't agree with the war in Iraq, and I'm not really sure we should be in Afghanistan anymore. And I was getting personal letters from West Point, because again, I don't know if I shared this before that now, but I've shared it in other podcasts. My grandfather fought in World War II in the Battle of the Bulge and under General Patton. So I do have a military bloodline. It's just a bit removed. My dad's generation didn't fight in any wars. So, yeah, I mean, and then I also got personal letters again from people at West Point. And I couldn't do it, you know? And what's terrible about it is like, I have so many friends in the military. I love all my friends in the military. I'm very close to many of them, but honestly, it's just a situation where I feel bad, and a lot of them will even admit that they feel like they don't really know what the point of their fight was now in hindsight. And I just feel so terrible for all of them. But I will say I am kind of grateful for this, is that I do believe, you know, mostly that unless, you know, you're a real jerk about being a veteran, that people are not near as mean about it as they were to the Vietnam veterans. You know, they're a lot better about, and that's probably because we realize in the legacy of Vietnam that the average foot soldier really didn't have a lot of control over those decisions. But, you know, it's just they're a lot better about it, but you feel awful, right? So, you know, like I have a friend who was the only person that survived in an IED attack on an armored vehicle. And, you know, is kind of permanently crippled. And I just look at him, I'm like, how is this man alive? You know, and why was this so important for him to, you know, go over there and do that? And I understand, and that was the main thing. I understand that's always the risk, right? And I didn't see the point in risking myself in that way for what I felt like was ultimately going to amount to nothing, you know? And it pretty much did, which is the irony of that situation. So anyway, I wanted to sort of highlight some other things too. So like I said, I got really jaded after the Pat Tillman thing. That was my line. That was like, okay, this just seems ridiculous. But then shortly after that, right around that era also too, you had the shoe bomber incident where there was a guy who got on a plane and tried to detonate a shoe bomb, but it failed. And then the passenger subdued him. And then, of course, there was also plenty of there's plenty of stuff that keeps coming out about how stuff easily is getting by TSA. I think it's gotten a little better, but there was like one study that came out where like their supervisors were able to sneak through 80% of bombs, which is just frightening. So it's like we have all this other stuff now on the books that's supposed to keep us safe, but it doesn't even keep us safe, man. It failed. It completely failed. And that's really where I'm sort of heading with this is like, because if I'm going to say that the solutions to the problem don't work, then obviously I have to offer some solutions, right? I can't just come in here and be a total, pisser on everything about that, and not, give some type of solution. And the solution really is, I think it's more about situational awareness training. And for I will say this, our country is getting better at that. But for a long time, people would just be completely oblivious to their surroundings and just expect sort of like the government to come figure it out for them. And that's just not how you can be. You have to understand the situation. The way these attacks get thwarted more is when somebody, an average citizen, intervenes. And I'm not saying you gotta be like roaming around like crazily and just pointing a gun at everyone. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you got to just, recognize a situation, right? Like those American soldiers when they were on the subway in France that stopped that thing. They recognized the guy was a threat and took out the threat. And that's the only thing you can really do is just be more aware of a situation. And I still want to point out, they say, and I say that because we watch a lot of videos on this at my office, and once a year we do, and in there, that's one of the biggest things they say, and I absolutely agree, is that you just have to be aware more of yourself, be more in the moment, right? We talk about that all the time because people are glued to their phones and their internet or whatever, but be in the moment. If you're in the moment, then you're going to know more of what's going on, be able to take some type of steps that may slow down or hamper some of these things. But no, having some type of Stasi level control of an area, I don't think that's ever going to work. I'm sorry, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone will come in here and present some sort of study that shows it works, but can you really say that with all these attacks that still have happened? No. And I also point out too, they said in the video, the odds are still incredibly low that you will actually be the victim of one of these attacks. They're very low. So, just be aware of your surroundings. That's all it takes. If you see a sketchy guy trying to, you see a car start driving over embankments into the middle of a crowd, call the police department. Shout at people, move out of the way. I mean, it's simple stuff like that. Anyway, so back on that point again, I just want to reiterate, our government, this is why it's so hard to justify to me the Patriot Act and some of these other really harsh draconian measures, is our government knew about 9/11 before 9/11 happened. They just didn't react slow enough, and they really, for I think they were hesitant to trust some Russian intelligence too prior to that. And the same thing then repeated itself later with the Boston Marathon bombing, because there was all kinds of evidence on the Tsarnaev brothers prior to that. And I don't know, it's just like, I remember listening because one of the hosts on NPR, I think her name was Terry Gross, actually knew one of the Tsarnaev brothers because they used to hang out with their children or something. And the way she talked about this guy was that, like he was a great student, everybody loved him, and then something just happened where he was just gone for a while. And, that's really troubling, and I'm not really sure. That's the situation where I have a tough time about what to do, because we get people who get caught up in cults and other things all the time. I mean, I saw one documentary, I think it was NPR did, where some woman from Indiana moved off and joined ISIS and then, of course, regretted it a couple of years later and left. And now, the government's not really sure whether to trust her, and I don't blame them, And I don't know what it takes to sort of. This is a situation where, like, I don't think laws are going to change an attitude, right? Like, what laws are, should we now make it illegal for you to, because the thing is if we make it illegal for you to view one type of thing, you know, that may or may not be supportive of a certain radical cause, there's plenty of other radical causes we don't, right? I mean, where do you ever draw the line there? And I'm sorry, guys. This is full jaded right now. I don't have a good answer. I think that if people have strong friend groups, that helps. But I'm not even sure if that helps all the time. You know, I will say though, I do think that is part of what would help reduce sort of mass shootings and a lot of terrorist attacks is that. You know, if people are really plugged in and feel a part of their community, I would think, hopefully, they would be less likely to get in a situation where they would want to commit these type of acts. But it's still, it's tricky, man. It's just tricky. And I guess my big thing is, you know, everybody in a situation needs to be more aware of their surroundings. And I just, if you think that the government can stop these things, I think you're a little bit misplaced in your reasoning. And so this is the other thing I wanted to hit upon as I sort of close here, is it's going to be very interesting in this legacy of pulling out now. You know, we still maintain some type of presence because we did a drone strike and it killed innocent people. And that's really where I have a big problem with our intervention, is that how can you claim you can't? And this is where the Obama administration, oh my goodness, it baffles my mind so much because everybody said, you know, of course under Bush and of course under Trump, and now there's even people under Biden that are saying, you know, our public support around the world is dropping our positive view, right? It's not as high as it was in the early and late mid-90s, but I mean, and in, I guess even in the late 80s. But the thing is like they say that, but then Obama was the one who was, and don't get me wrong, Trump has been did airstrikes too, and so does Biden. But Trump, or I mean Obama was the one who was doing extrajudicial drone strikes on even American citizens in foreign lands. You know, granted, I mean, if we're being really specific here, they basically sign off on stuff that a bunch of people tell them. But, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy that, like, I don't know, they want us to be a more iron fist America. I don't want to be that type of America. I don't think that is a good move. I mean, I don't know how that would make us better viewed if we're, I mean, we killed kids. I mean, people are, you know, people, it's weird how people romanticize Obama, some people, but then, you know, they constantly blast us for anything that happens with Israel and the Palestinians, which I won't touch on that one very much in here. And I don't know. I don't think there's any winning with people. I think if we had a more long-term thing where we, I don't know. You'd almost be better off letting these groups in America that want to be involved and do whatever, do it in an unofficial capacity, not tied to our military. So I think that's already happening. You know, places are already hiring out our contractors, and I know that makes some people unhappy, but you know, if they are no longer in military service, they are a free person. And they're, in my right, they have the right to be employed to do whatever they want to do. You know, so that's how I feel about that. But yeah, I think that would almost be better because at the end of the day, people are going to want us to, everybody's going to have their things that they want us as us to intervene in. And we got to ask ourselves what blood we really want on our hands for things. And so, that's really what leaves me, I guess, perhaps the most jaded about the whole thing is, and now we have to bring over a bunch of refugees to America, which don't get me wrong, we do owe them now because we made a promise to them in turn for services to us, so we owe them. But Now you're gonna have the inevitable situation where in some places people be racist where they're moved in, and then what happens if we get another scenario where some of these people, like the Tsarnaev brothers, meet some cleric one day and all of a sudden they're radicalized and now we have another attack, and it's just, oh my gosh, it's so makes me so jaded and tired because it's like a complete cycle over and over again. And I just don't see a good solution. I guess the biggest, like I said, the only solution I can really offer is we need to have more situational awareness as an individual citizen. I think we need to set a standard more so that the American military isn't going to do much except keep perhaps the world trade lines open. Because I just don't, it's clear that we can't, we don't succeed in colonialism. It's clear that a lot of these factions in these places we invade in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria don't even want our form of government anyway, which I don't necessarily blame them. So I just think it's a moot point. I think we should just offer to provide, defend the trade lanes, and then if other groups that were previous military or whatever in this country want to go off and be hired as, contractors for their own ideological reasons, I guess we have to let them, and that's just how it's going to be. But those are sort of my thoughts on the whole thing. Feel free to tell me they're wrong, but I'm the person who's grown up with this legacy. I've grown up in middle America during this time period and seen it all play out before my eyes coming into adulthood. So, anyway, that's how I feel about it. Let me know what you all think. Talk to you later.
Check out the Know Your Place podcast on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/knowyourplacepodcast, all one word, or on Facebook at facebook.com/knowyourplacepodcast, all one word. And we will be coming soon to YouTube and iTunes, and maybe another social media platform near you. Special thanks to my wife, Sarah, and Jay Graff for the riff.
Bye.